are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hi, welcome to episode 50 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. We decided to do something completely different, so it's a bit crazy at the moment. We're meant to have another guest joining us. I'm going to see if there's any way we could perhaps get him to join. No, I don't know. We're still broadcasting at the moment. If he can't join us soon, then we're sorry. We've tried everything we can to, you know, do it.
It's rather a pain because it's right up my alley. Don't drink kids.
Don't drink kids.
Like why just suddenly went robotic there? Don't drink kids.
Yeah, don't drink children. I think it's the lesson here.
Only drink adults.
That's my game plan.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, vampirism. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
True Blood.
I'm just saying to our guest, seeing if he can join from a thing.
Obviously, Buffy's better.
Of course, Buffy's better. So what actually are we going to be talking about this episode once we're joined by people? Well, basically, it's our 50th episode, and we realise that actually we tend not to... We've never laid down the law of what it is we actually really, 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 really like. We've probably hinted at it. But it's the stuff, it's the fandoms that we truly tend to stick by, regardless of how much other people despise them.
And no matter how much other people tend to mess them up.
Oh, yeah, that's
I mean,
too.
Star Wars fans are like that, aren't they? You know, they stick to the original trilogy.
Yeah, they stick.
And they go to the prequel trilogy. Yeah. And like, you know what? We're just gonna be like, no. This is ours.
So they stick stoically by it, despite all the other stuff that may or may not happen.
That's because the prequel should never have been bloody well made.
This is true.
The Jar Jar phenomenon.
The Jar Jar phenomenon.
Misa Jar Jar Binks.
No one's actually got Star Wars as their favouritist fandom in this thing. We've already decided who's talking about
it's
what.
It's a bit too cliche for geek culture, isn't it? You know, because you have stuff like fanboys and a lot of other, you know, kind of mediums where the fans are predominantly Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
It's almost like a stereotype of nerds.
Yeah.
See, I'm all.
It used to be like Tolkien type stuff, but now it's a Star Wars-y, isn't it?
Yeah. I suppose we should probably talk about other things to see if our guests.
Well, to be honest, we should probably introduce ourselves.
Okay. So for those of you who don't know, I'm Emily.
Yeah. I'm Paul.
And then there's two other guys called Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
So that's
see, no booze this time.
For those of you who've never watched or listened or whatever before, yes, there are three Pauls on this podcast situation.
Second, I thought you were going to go into like a Sesame Street. Can you count three Pauls? One Paul. Two Paul. Three Paul.
And you'll just remind me of the fact that played the count, was it died last year or earlier this year?
Did he?
No.
He passed away.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh. Right.
It's
a minute's silence.
Sunlight.
1 minute!
For those of you who might be trying to watch this and wondering why is something to do with Nerd Assemble over on Hex Dimension, that's because we've decided to launch another website for which the podcast will be a part of. It's basically nerdassemble.co.uk.
Nerdassemble.co.uk.
Thank you. We'll continue to exist and obviously serve up podcast episodes like the audio version of this once we scrape it together. Meanwhile, the hexdimension.com will include podcasts, videos, and written content about lots of geeky things.
check out the video to see Emily here's impression of Mario.
Yeah, I'm so embarrassed right now. It's more embarrassing than this.
Only a small portion of
it. It's more embarrassing than an hour or more of this. Believe me.
Surely not.
Really?
No, I'll be back in 2 seconds. I'm just going to check this out.
Oh, God damn it.
First hit.
I think so. Yeah, so we've launched this website. There's a whole load of content went live on it just before we started this. So we don't mind if you go and look at the site whilst we're broadcasting, as long as you keep us open in a window so you can hear us. That's me pointing for those when I do the podcast edit. That's me pointing between me and the camera repeatedly. I'm watching you. So yeah, I think we should probably get on to what we're going to discuss for this episode, because we got stuff we want to talk about other than Hex Dimension, which is awesome and will remain awesome as long as we put stuff up on it.
Even
if we do say so ourselves. It's also inspired by Skittles.
Skittles?
Skittles.
Have you tasted the rainbow?
The colour situation. People asking why Hex? Our guest is having technical.
Because it means we can say hexy time.
To be honest, most of our guests.
It's hexy time.
Make it sound as though it's like Nixon saying that.
Awesome.
I'm not a hex.
So why did we choose the name Hex for the Hex Dimension? It's because we cover 6 main topic areas. Yeah.
Just in case you can't count.
Just in case you can't count, yeah, Hex, 6, that kind of lingual mathematical link. So we like this podcast, we cover things like books. I know we don't talk about them very often, but books. Talk about films on there. Talk about comics separately from books. We wanted the distinction from like novels and nonfiction and comics and graphic novels.
Wanted visual art.
We talk about TV shows.
Yep.
A couple of things. I've started an X-Files retrospective on the site because, for those who don't know, it's the 20th anniversary of the show launching this September.
20th.
It's quite scary.
I feel quite old now. Thanks for that.
I don't care how old David Duchovny is because he's been in Californication like the last few years, so clearly age is not an issue for him.
Okay. Well,
and I must say, Gillian Anderson in Hannibal.
She
was always a fox, though,
wasn't
she?
Okay, we've also got obviously video games, and that was 5. So the 6th one is actually kind of board games, not just like board games like Monopoly or Settlers of Catan, but other stuff like D&D, for example. And Missy here also has a piece of content discussing about her choice of D&D that she's going to be running, which, what was it, Pathfinder?
Pathfinder, cool.
Yeah, which is basically an altered version of D&D 3.5 edition, with sort of sensible things put in and some less sensible things kind of taken out. I had some research. I had lots of people say stuff at me at Twitter a few weeks ago as I grappled with, do I go 4th edition, because quite frankly I don't want to be tracking down 3.5 books of D&D, or do I go Pathfinder? And because of the fact that 4th ed still seeming a bit kind of hammy, and it's not been well supported by Wizards from what I can tell, I wanted to go something which had, you know, a lot of support and fan sort of community built up around it so that I could ask people questions. Because I am not used to DMing. I've only done it once, and that was with a White Wolf game of Aberrant. I'm going to be running a Pathfinder campaign from next week, where I will probably be torturing a bunch of my close friends on a regular basis with dice, obviously, and hand-drawn maps.
So that's just a hobby, then.
Yeah. Normally I torture people through karaoke, but this is going to be a far more interesting experience.
Far more personal.
I don't know, karaoke can get quite personal. Don't forget there was that one time when I wanted to do, you know, karaoke, The Bad Touch, that sadly the karaoke evening was coming to a close and my request didn't quite get, you know, picked up. So that's kind of how things are. Okay, so the Muppet Hex. I think we're going to have to start talking about what we wanted to talk to you about for this 50th episode.
Yes, this is a 50th episode of Nerds Assemble, not the launching of Hex Dimension. It's both.
It's a celebration of the fact that we've launched a full
website. But these people are tuning in for nerds, and nerds is what you're going to get.
Yeah, so we're not doing news this week because this is the 50th
episode.
I just wanted to geek.
I was just going to say that. You say a URL.
Pardon?
Oh, I can tweet out as well.
Is there a URL you can tweet out?
Just to watch this, as in, if anyone's not seeing it right now.
Depends what it says at the top of your window. There's like an embed thing, and if you click on that, it says there's like a YouTube link. So I suggest trying to copy that YouTube link and then sending it onto Twitter, basically. I can't easily... Can I easily do it from here? I'm going to see if I can do it from here a minute. Let's see if I can... Okay, so it says three people in this hangout.
I don't think I can.
Okay. I'm just going to check. How...
I don't want to just invite the horde.
Horde level 50.
I'm just going to try inviting our guests again.
I mean, presumably he is checking his Gmail account.
He's meant to be.
Don't you just love technology?
Yeah. Especially when it's clever technology.
See, I don't mind it when things don't work, when you have like a expanded period of time to kind of experiment with them. It's when you've kind of got a deadline and you've got to get stuff working, you know.
Our guest is trying the time and favoured sort of recourse and is restarting his PC. But I think we should get talking about our geeky things. If he doesn't make it onto the show tonight, I will tell you what he was going to tell you to the best of my capabilities. I can't tell you about his love of a particular geeky thing because he was also going to discuss that with us. But regardless, his information will be passed on.
Sweet.
Brilliant.
And if anybody of you are asking, I didn't realise this was a video, and my bulb's blown. Either so, that, or I have been captured by aliens and I just don't want to tell you all.
Uh-huh. Just at the end of the episode, we're just going to see something approach behind you and then you'll be snatched away.
I have glowing sort of eyeballs just kind of lurking out of kind of like dark, just kind of like glowing. That's what
it could well be, yes. It might do.
Was it the Vishnu?
You might howl at the moon.
In Doctor Who? But is it? I think it's Vishnu something or other. The creatures that live in shadows and eat flesh.
Of those things. Yeah, that's a good point. You're surrounded by
shadows.
And doesn't that lead us straight into the fact, Cookie, that would you like to talk about your fandom? That's your favourite fandom.
I can bore you a little bit with my fandom if you like. I'm pretty sure regular listeners will know exactly what my fandom was. And of course, there was no choice but to pick the greatest science fiction British drama, Doctor Who. Yay! Which I've followed since I was a wee little nipper. So I can remember stories from... I've watched stories all the way through. I've watched Unearthly Child. I've watched Seeds of Doom with Patrick Troughton. I had quite a few videos with John Pertwee, which I can't watch anymore because I haven't got a video player. Bummer.
Boo.
Go on.
I was going to say, are there any episodes that you actually didn't like?
That I didn't like?
Yeah.
Ah, yeah, okay. One of my favourite Doctors was Sylvester McCoy, but his first episode, Time and the Rani, I didn't like that very well. It wasn't very well scripted. It seemed to be everywhere, and it was probably one of the weakest stories I ever saw, unfortunately.
Sylvester McCoy?
Yeah, Sylvester McCoy was good. He got when he was actually given the proper written stories like Curse of Fenric, classic, Battlefield, he could really pull it off, but unfortunately, I've upset him.
We've just lost Retroid by the looks of things.
I'm sorry, Retroid. I take it back.
Come back, Retroid.
Babe, what else is it that you absolutely love about who?
I just love the whole concept of this renegade who's basically run away from his own people and then found himself to be a hero throughout the universe by saving other people. It's really good. I like it, how it's expanded. I was a bit nervous when they brought it back with Christopher Eccleston. That was probably one of the other weakest episodes of the very first episode of Rose, in it, and the Autons. I didn't think it came off as well as it could have done. But then it sort of just gathered its pace and that sort of, you know, and built from there, which was cool. You know, it's just the whole, I just want to be able to travel in time in a blue box and meet people in time.
Has
it's
anybody
cool.
else ever been like, hey, if I run into the Doctor, you'll be okay with me, you know, just kind of scooting off a little while, wouldn't you?
I would be, yeah, definitely. Wait for me! Don't close that door.
The concept of travelling with the Doctor has always perturbed me a bit, especially with the fact that they've actually played off of the time element in the last couple of series. Like, how it affects the companions' sort of lives in terms of how long they can potentially be away if they're obviously, you know, because they're obviously aging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whilst they're away, and it depends how long they're away. You know, you could drop them, like, a couple of hours after they left, you know, their present.
To be honest, it's one of those things where, you, as a assistant to the Doctor, you've got only several kind of exit routes from the Doctor's life. Either A, you choose to go back to normal life, like Martha did. B, you get stuck somewhere, like Amy Pond or Rose Tyler. Or D, you kind of... D? Or three. You
end up getting killed like Adric. Bless him.
And Rory, over and over and over again.
Yes, in pain.
So,
not good.
You know, obviously, every kind of journey's got to come to an end, and when you've got something as good of a journey as what the Doctor, you know, kind of does, then...
That's what I liked about when I think it was when was it Ro? No, when Martha left, about how it affected her views on Earth and everything else.
Yeah.
And after what she'd seen.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's quite a realistic depiction. You know, you can't go back to, you know, normal life.
He's back.
You've kind of been, you know, going around the universe, exploring, and, you know, kind of having all these awesome experiences, and then going back to...
Welcome back!
...in London.
Yeah.
Hello, I have no idea what happened there. I do apologise.
I didn't realise you hated Sylvester McCoy that much.
Yeah.
Apparently, so. You flounced off. Except I didn't have the budget due to the BBC cuts at the time to flounce off, so I just disappeared.
Oh, good old BBC, bless them.
I'm just trying to think.
Yes.
Any Cookie, because obviously the idea of who's going to be the next Doctor to use obviously something that concerns you greatly, one might say.
It does, but I think, in all fairness, it bothers everybody. Everybody was kicking off when Christopher Eccleston left, including myself, because he'd only done one season. But, you know, he was quite cool on that, so... But then they brought David Tennant in, and he created his own character. When David Tennant left, I honestly thought, oh dear, here we go. This is going to be dodgy. How are you going to replace that? And fair enough, I've never really liked Matt Smith as much as David Tennant, if I'm totally honest, but he has managed to create his own quirks. He's managed to create his own little quirky attitudes, and he has sort of been able to deliver 4 years of, at times, spectacular Doctor Who adventures. You know, so I think it would be nice to find out who they are going to replace him with, and it's going to be nice to see the November special to see how John Hurt fits into it, because he must be a Doctor from a previous incarnation. So
that was awesome seeing him pop up.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's right.
It is going to be a very difficult. Sorry. It's going to be difficult for anybody to follow David Tennant and Matt Smith, I think. But they're going to have the chance to create their own Doctor. And from what I've seen, Jenna Louise Coleman, Clara, has actually done an interview today where apparently she's saying that the Doctor's, the way the Doctor Who's going to carry on now is going to be a change in direction again, like they did with Matt Smith. So you're going to see another change in direction. We're going to see a little bit, possibly a bit more about who the Doctor is. So we'll have to wait and see.
See, that intrigued me, because Matt Smith has always been, well, his Doctor has always been a darker character than Tennant's.
He has, but David Tennant still had his moments of darkness. I think all the Doctors have had their moments of the darkness. Certainly if you really listen to the Big Finish audios, Sylvester McCoy's Doctor gets really dark, and that's how I feel they would have wanted it to do and go in the BBC series. If you look at episodes like Battlefield, where he actually threatens Morgana, you know, he gets very dark then. And The Curse of Fenric, when he's playing chess as well, you see a manipulative side to him.
Yeah, I think Matt Smith, well, his Doctor, obviously not the actor, but the Doctor, when played by Matt Smith, he does, well, he kind of often lies for a start.
He does.
And yeah. not just, you know, to keep people in safety, but to kind of keep people in check as well.
Yeah. He's very manipulative, isn't he?
Yeah.
And I think he, over the years, though, I suppose you do become like that. 900 years.
He is also an alien.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
That's one thing which I appreciate from the series. He isn't human. He looks human, but he isn't always, and he doesn't necessarily have humans as the highest priority. He likes them.
But yeah.
There are limits.
I think
they are.
It's not unconditional.
I think one of the things about Doctor Who, though, is that because it's kind of so open, there's just so much that they can do with it. It's not kind of a closed thing like some other sci-fi series where you've got like a situation, you've got technology, and the story's moving on, and you know it can almost not go any other way. With Doctor Who, it's completely open. You can rewrite time, you can rewrite its past, you can rewrite, you know, anything.
Yeah, it's got lots of scope. I mean, the biggest worry I've got as a fan at the moment is how they're going to get, if John Hurt is a previous Doctor incarnation, so that would actually mean Matt Smith is reincarnation number 12. Now, according to Gallifrey lore, there is only supposed to be 12 regenerations. So it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, but
I know they're going to write around it, but to me, that's going to be a big thing about how they actually handle it and how they get around it. That's what I'm going to be interested to see how they do.
Well, to be fair, I mean, if it's Gallifreyan lore, and Gallifrey is kind of stuck in the Time War with seemingly no recourse of getting out of it.
True. It'll be interesting to see. Anyway.
Yeah, but how many universe reboots has there been since then?
Yeah. Quite a few.
Okay, I think I'm going to move us on next to another favourite television series, it seems. There's actually a lot of TV shows tonight that people wanted to talk about. But this was a particularly interesting in terms of the specificity of what it doesn't like out of the entire existence.
Yeah.
So, Paul, do you want to explain your favorite fandom?
Star Trek.
But
I'm not watching the series because of Kirk.
What?
Mostly because of Kirk.
You can't discount. You can't discount Kirk.
Well, no, just.
But why would you discount the finest captain who has led a Starfleet ship?
You see, I
wouldn't go as far as say his finest captain either, but.
Well, yeah, that would be him saying it. That's why.
Yeah, I mean,
it wouldn't be me. The finest captain is obviously Picard.
Yes.
Come
thank
on.
You.
Of course.
Definitely.
I'm quite enjoying Chris Pine's performance as Kirk in the new Star Trek films.
Yes.
But I was never really, you know, fan of, Doody's name. Sorry, my brain's...
William Shatner.
Exactly, him.
T.J. Hooker.
The shot.
Yeah. I mean, he always seemed a bit like... like almost like you know, making love to the strange alien girl is part of the mission. To explore strange worlds. Not strange new species.
Well, it with Star Trek and Kirk, it's important to remember that that's what the network wanted. So if you watch the first season and quite a bit of the second as well, he's not anywhere near as, you know, as much of a Lothario as he. When you get to the third season, hell's bells. It's just, yeah, you know, the network is, you know, you're just going to do whatever the hell we tell you to, and that's when he, you know, that's when he just went around seeding the galaxy in many literal senses.
Well, yeah, I mean, because obviously there's Star Trek Next Generation, there's DS9, which I'm currently watching through.
Which that is one, awesome. I did enjoy awesome. Sisko.
It's a completely different tone to any of the other Star Treks.
Yes,
it is.
Star Trek Voyager, which I know Retro is already cringing at.
I liked some of Voyager. I couldn't get into the whole of it, but there were some standout episodes for me.
Yeah.
The Doctor.
Yeah, there were some characters where there was like, you know, there's you know, fair amount to it.
We're gonna have to give up on having our guest.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know, the fact that he's a EMH or E.
Emergency medical hologram.
Medical hologram.
So he's, well, not necessarily like Data, but he's kind of obviously software, in essence.
Yeah, sort of based on the idea of all those times when Geordi would recreate someone on the holodeck and fall for them.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm sorry, didn't a couple of them have issues with doing that?
Well,
there's
Reg,
like one guy.
Reg, he wasn't creating
Reg Barkley.
New people. He was basically having versions of the
Deanna Troi, basically.
Yeah.
He liked Deanna Troi, didn't he? Bless him. Good old Reg.
Throw off your inhibitions.
some of Reg's performances are most cringeworthy, but you know, it kind of paints you know, everybody in Starfleet as not just, you know, somebody who's extremely competent at their job and, you know, has no personality whatsoever. There's a lot of personality.
Yeah. With,
which is actually quite nice.
Yeah.
Star Trek Enterprise, I haven't watched too much of, but I my dad's quite into it, and he kind of keeps on kind of giving me, you know, the storylines for, you know, the, like episodes in like second and third series, and Dr. Noonien's son comes in, and so it's kind of interesting in that respect. And there's apparently like Time War, and I think at one point did we meet the Borg or something? I can't
remember. Yeah, they. Do they meet the Borg? Yeah, I think they do meet the Borg at one point. I think that was in the third season, which is probably its strongest season, to be fair. Which was Sod's Law, because it had already been cancelled, I believe, hadn't it?
So. Yeah, I mean, you find that with a lot of series where it's like the strongest season is the last season, just when it's kind of getting good. A bit like Angel, but we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, it's just the whole concept of either kind of exploring the galaxy or just kind of exploring kind of new races and whatnot. And I have to say, even though I kind of say it's about exploring the galaxy and whatnot, I do find that my favourite episodes are the ones that are actually set mostly on board. That, you know, say for example Voyager or Star Trek, you know, Next Generation. My favourite episodes are the ones where they're actually on the starship, rather than going down to an alien planet where something's slightly off, but you know, everything else is the same.
Yeah, I'm gonna just try it at the moment. Sorry, do you want to keep talking?
Like say for example that one episode in the first season where they go down to like this, you know, absolute paradise of a planet, and Wesley Crusher gets involved in like a game of kind of catch with some of the local boys. And he ends up.
Oh, I was so hopeful with that episode.
Yeah, and he ends up accidentally smashing a greenhouse, and it's like, yeah, all crime is kind of, you know, punishment of death. So yeah, it's kind of the same, but not. And everybody runs around everywhere rather than walking. But yeah, there's some episodes like that, which is like, yeah, it's. it's interesting to a certain extent just to kind of see like our society but with a different slant on it.
Yeah.
But on the whole, the more interesting aspects I found are there actually stuff like time travel ones and quantum realities and stuff like that.
Cool.
I think Next Generation was just about the golden age for that kind of, you know, Trek sci-fi.
Next Generation was blind in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, DS9, that was a completely different tack. I mean, a lot more battles, you know, kind of, there was like a dark side to the Federation during.
Yeah.
Also, there's a greater overarching plot.
Yeah, there is actually. The introduction of the Dominion and, you know, I won't spoil it for you because you haven't seen all of it.
And Sisko's place and everything.
Yeah, Sisko's place and everything, and the religious elements and the political elements of, you know, kind of the Federation and, you know, yeah.
And the return of Worf, yay!
Yeah, that's true.
Today is the day to die.
It was nice having the Bajorans and the Cardassians as two different cultures that were, you know, built upon. They weren't just... Yeah. There for an episode or two and then book it off.
Exactly, there was a lot of kind of cultural diversity within within DS9. I mean, you had like, some of the really major races actually doing quite interesting things, like the Cardassians. I know they weren't that major in the Next Generation, but they were obviously put upon and whatnot. So they occupied Bajor, and I remember in one episode in Star Trek Next Generation. There was actually a hint that in the episode where Worf kind of shifts to alternate realities.
Yep.
And one of them actually had it where he shifted to a reality where the Bajorans overthrew the Cardassians and actually had become far more kind of violent and aggressive. And I actually noted that. It's actually quite interesting. But it's like Klingons, obviously, you know, the whole deal with them. Romulans, they kind of get involved underhanded way, or from an underhanded way, from the perspective of...
I'm a fan of the Romulans, anything that builds upon them.
Yeah. So
it's good.
Kind of got so many kind of different races kind of having... It's almost like a multicultural version of Star Trek, in a way, because a lot of the command staff in, you know, both the... Voyager and Next Generation have been human, apart from like Data, Worf. Deanna Troi's Beta Zoid.
There was the Bajoran ensign that appeared in season 4, was it?
Oh yes, Ensign Ro. Yeah.
That's the one.
Although, 5, Ensign Ro.
Yeah. Although she wasn't necessarily command level. I think she was actually just ensign. But
no, she kept getting busted down.
Yeah. I mean, in Voyager, you've got Tuvok.
Oh, a little bit of trivia. It was supposed to be Ensign Ro as the second in command in DS9.
Really?
That'd have been interesting.
I can kind
so she was supposed to be assigned to DS9 as a kind of a, you know, Bajoran Federation liaison, but
what happened to her?
I forget. The actress, she went on to do several other things, but of course she was the captain in
Battlestar Galactica.
The Pegasus episode of Galactica.
Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, basically she didn't want to sign on to a series at that particular time.
Which, fair enough. Although, it's quite interesting, because that would have meant that, you know, because obviously Cole Meany, who played Chief O'Brien in Next Generation, shifted over to DS9. Worf did, I know Jonathan Frakes, did a cameo in there. In fact,
as Thomas Riker.
Yeah, exactly. If you note that most of the, Next Generation, they actually have an episode, I believe, where they visit. It's the other way around. Sorry, it's DS9, the very first episode where you actually have.
Picard
actually visited and whatnot. The first episode, Voyager, actually starts out from DS9.
Which is a nice little tie-up.
Exactly. So they're all kind of tied up in a nice...
Am I right in thinking that once Worf actually comes to serving on DS9, that several of the films, of the Star Trek films, he's somehow not on DS9. He's available to do crazy stuff with the Enterprise crew.
Yeah,
that's kind of.
I had to go shopping.
It's a long shopping trip for a Klingon.
So it makes me think that in all of the episodes, if you kind of put like all of the episodes of Star Trek, you know, all of the different series in a row, who would be the most? Well, in most of them, it'd probably be Worf.
Yeah, or Michael Dorn.
He is the top.
That's a lot of time to spend in makeup and prosthetics on your face.
That's true.
A very long time.
I'm surprised he doesn't just get plastic surgery.
Oh, that's just mean. No. that's worse than like actresses and actors having to put on or lose weight for a role.
Yeah.
It's always horrifying.
But it would be awesome to walk around as a Klingon, though.
Yeah.
Oh, is that just me?
Did anybody else see a picture of the guy that plays Thingy in Breaking Bad? Bryan Cranston, is it?
He's cosplay.
Yeah, he went to the Comic Con as himself, in essence.
Yeah.
It's a genius.
Yeah, wearing a mask. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Cool.
Star Trek.
Because I saw a few people, a few photos of people who had, you know, just had their picture taken with him just because, he is someone, you know, cosplaying from Breaking Bad. Have my photo taken with him. I said, no, it is actually him.
Awesome.
This is a great way to walk around the con as yourself.
It reminds me of, I'm not entirely sure whether it's true.
Yeah, precisely, yeah, because you can be kind of, you know, in the fandom, but you're not going to get mobbed or anything.
I'm not sure whether it's true or just an urban legend, but Charlie Chaplin once entered a Charlie Chaplin lookalike competition and came third.
I have heard that.
Yeah, it probably is an urban legend, but then who knows? This thing happened a long time ago. Truth is probably settled against,
yeah,
sort of like a deep crevice somewhere, and nobody knows. But there is one thing that always strikes me about Star Trek, like about the three sort of like cool series that you like so much, which is obviously Next Gen, DS9, and Voyager.
Yeah,
and that's the fashion. I know I'd be really girly at this point, but the clothes have always struck me as a bit kind of like, really, is that what we're viewing in the future? It's okay. I know it started off in your Next Gen, obviously started off in the 80s, but the continued use of shoulder pads is alarming.
Especially the Romulans.
Yeah, like
there is a blog dedicated to that.
To Star Trek fashion?
Yeah.
Oh. I'm going to be talking about what will be one of my subjects in a bit. There was at one point a blog dedicated to the fashion of Buffy once upon a time, identifying everything. Or even more interesting, going back to the X-Files track from earlier, there was once a blog that tried to identify every single watch that Fox Mulder wore in the X-Files.
Why?
Apparently he didn't wear the same watch every episode.
So?
Being like, you know, the task for today, just get me a new watch.
It's like, I assume, but then again, I mean, the amount of, was it like electromagnetic sort of fields he tends to go through where stuff seems to kind of go awry, and it's like maybe the characters just genuinely break watches all the time, and that's why there's a new watch almost every time.
It's possible.
There's actually a woman at my work that swears that if she wears her watch on her left hand, it actually stops, so she has to wear it on the right hand.
She should get that checked out.
That's really freaky.
Yeah. Anyway, Star Trek.
Incidentally, I've just had a quick look on Snopes. Apparently, that Charlie Chaplin thing, him losing a lookalike contest, is true.
Ooh. Hmm. Interesting.
I was
thinking of doing. What's the thing where if you say it both at the same time?
Jinx.
That's Jinx. I was gonna say Jinx, but I realised that I can't hit you over the internet if you do speak.
You could try sort of going towards the webcam, but then it'd probably scare the audience more than anyone else, to be honest.
I've just got, you know, in Wii Bowling, when you accidentally throw the ball behind. I've just got this image of the audience like doing that. But yeah, Star Trek.
No.
No, no. He just zoomed in on all of this.
Who zoomed in?
Did you?
No, what?
This is how I feel about Star Trek.
Oh, that's freaky.
We are so easily entertained.
Far too easily entertained.
You see, webcams easily amused.
This is like the second or third time, so he's definitely not joining us. He tried, things didn't work. I don't know what technology problems this individual's having. We'll explain what he was going to talk about, because it's kind of important. But anyway, I think we should move on.
But we will have him
one particular area of discussion, and that is the films.
Okay,
obviously,
yeah.
You don't really like the ones with the original series crew so much.
Yeah, well, it's like the old adage that the even Star Trek films are good and the odd ones are bad until you get to 10.
Which was 10.
That's not quite true, personally, but
I think my favourite Star Trek film is First Contact.
Well, yeah, it's kind of got to be, isn't it?
Well, unless of course you're somebody like
Star Trek Six.
Which is six?
The Undiscovered Country.
Okay.
I have. Yeah,
that is just a good sci-fi film.
Yes.
Anyway.
I have actually watched all of the Star Trek films at some point.
Yes, when it was on film 4 and
they
like
did like
a massive
marathon. Yeah.
And of course Star Trek 2, The Wrath of Khan.
Actually, well, what do you think of the new films then, if you like Star Trek so much? And you don't like original Star Trek.
You see, I really do like the new films. It's kind of got a modern twist on stuff. Obviously they've kind of went back with certain things on it, say for example, ability to teleport when people are falling. Basically teleporting on or transporting onto a starship that's at warp and stuff like that. Yeah, there's certain things that
apparently anything's possible if you've got a Scottishman with you.
Yeah.
That's what we need on this podcast. That'll make things work.
Podcast, cut it. I apologize to everyone. Although I can say that because I've got Scottish blood, so it's okay. Sorry, Scottish. I apologise again.
I think Retro, you're going to have to talk about your fandom now, which, if you consider your nickname, is not surprising at all that it's your favourite sort of area of geekdom.
It's almost like in your face, blatant.
It's a bit of an indicator, isn't it?
Just a little.
Please talk to us about your love of the retro games.
Well, my username is Retroid, based on Metroid. My username on Twitter, because some bastard had already taken Retroid.
You lied.
I decided, well, what the Metroid games is Super Metroid, so I just called myself, Super Retroid, because I wasn't planning on using Twitter. That went really well, that plan.
Having that, if we cloned you, you would be Retroid Prime.
I could be Retroid Prime, yeah.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
And then if suddenly you got
just so long as I'm not, Retroid.
Retroid Fusion.
Another R.
I'm sorry.
Ooh, sexy
games.
Time.
Sorry, retro games.
Well, it started off. I was playing games back in the Atari and Commodore 64 days. A lot of those, most old games are crap. I'll get that out the way first. But there are some that they're just perfect encapsulations of what to do with the hardware, what to do with the game mechanic, and it just works. I can still play Manic Miner. It may not be everyone's cup of tea. Pac-Man. has anyone been able to improve that much on a maze game like that? I mean, to me, Pac-Man is just about perfect. Tetris. Have there actually been any of the sequels that have twiddled with the formula that have actually worked? I don't think so. So you have those examples of where they just have a game mechanic and they do it really well. And then you can just keep on doing that. But there's that side of it. But also, because I am just a massive geek when it comes to computer hardware and things like that, it's seeing what people can do with the old hardware, like the Commodore 64s, the Spectrums, even the Amstrad CPCs.
Yay!
So basically, the indie.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. you got a mention.
Thank you.
There was an example this week where there was an Atari 2600 demo, and it was released this year. Now, the thing about the Atari 2600 was it was released in the late 70s. What was it, about 77, 78? And Atari designed it pretty much as a Pong machine. That's all it was designed for. A few variants for other Atari games so they could flog more cartridges for it. Now, pretty much, in order to get anything on it which would resemble what we'd think of as a game that wasn't just a single screen, required incredible programming, because it had a very small memory footprint. You could only access a few K from the cartridge slot. It wasn't supposed to scroll that well. It only had so many sprites, and most of those were supposed to be very small. So what the programmers would do is they'd separate the screen out into different layers, and then basically do everything they could on one layer, say, at the top of the screen, and then they'd fool the console into resetting all of those and saying, oh, you haven't used those, use these again on here. And then they'd keep doing that, so they'd build up layers across the screen. And that would be like raster splitting, or raster being the scan line on the TV screen where it would just go along. The original TV screens where you could see the scan lines. And yeah, this demo that I watched this week, it doesn't look like much, from the perspective now, but knowing the limitations of the hardware, it's absolutely incredible. I'll have to post up a link to the the Nerds podcast Twitter account and such, but just seeing what these people can do with all these hardware tricks that they've learned over the years, it really is incredible. But going back to the games, there's the collecting of all the games that you remember. There's the picking up new ones, which you never got to play the first time round, but you can now. So there's getting the hardware, and there's getting, well, in some ways, the games are the hardware as well, especially when it comes to arcade machines or cartridges. But there's getting those when you couldn't before, and there's playing them, and the ones that still work are absolutely brilliant. And I think a lot of them, well, as an example, there's a recent story that there's a company bought the rights to about 300 Amiga games, and they're going to be re-releasing updated versions of them on Android.
That'd be cool.
Now, I'm not sure precisely which ones, but yeah, I do agree that there are some that are just absolutely classic, and they would stand up today. They would work really well on mobile phones and small screens like that, portable games.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them would work a lot better than a lot of portable and mobile games that are out there right now. But there you go. just shift.
It's quite interesting how a lot of retro retro games or games from yesteryear have actually started coming out on mobile consoles. And it's like, because it wasn't originally designed for mobile consoles, you know, most mobile games now, they're generally tend to be pick up and put down ones, so you can pick it up, ride on the bus, put it down whenever you want, and, you know, so do you think retro games suit that?
In a way, I think a lot do, because especially when they're single screen, they tend to be collect 'em up, they tend to be linear, they tend to be very, here is a task, you've got a few minutes to complete it in one way or another, either because the enemy waves are going to be attacking you if it's a shoot 'em up, or you've only got a time limit like on something like Manic Miner. Or it's just a time-limited experience in one way or another, just, you know, just because of the design. But it's going to be chopped up into different levels, you know, that kind of thing. So they translate well to the sort of pick-up-and-play, because when you walked into a shop and bought a Spectrum or a Commodore 64 or even an Amstrad CPC game, there we go. You wouldn't be expecting, you wouldn't read in a magazine a complaint that the single player only lasted 8 hours.
Yeah.
And you go, how could they? I feel so shortchanged on this. There's games in my collection for, you know, the various machines where I have not got anywhere close to the end, just because of the nature of the game isn't too, you know, have a story. It's just, it's the game. It keeps throwing more game at you.
Yeah.
Things like Bubble Bobble with, you know, 100 levels. And, yeah, they'd all be different. Yeah. Classic game. But it's not designed as something that you have to experience until the end. It's designed to challenge you, and if you get to the end, then you've done really well. You don't play it to get to the end. You play it just to
improve,
enjoy and survive.
A lot of the time, you know, because it was thought that it was impossible to get to the end, you know, that's why you have kill screens where a game just kind of completely messes up because you've got...
Yeah, I've had a few of those where it's, you know, play, game over. That's it. Well, I think I've just been kicked in the nuts by a game. Yeah. You know, expect a little something.
I have to admit, I was walking into town the other day, and I actually realised that if you're playing Space Invaders and you turn the monitor upside down, it completely changes your view of it, because then you are the Space Invader, you know, trying to colonise an alien world, and they're trying to defend themselves.
We're attacking you.
Yeah.
From their world?
You monster.
Sorry.
Evil bugger.
I think there have been variants on that, because Space Invaders is evergreens, where it's just such a simple idea. You can't screw it up, even though Taito have tried repeatedly over the years to screw it up. But things like Infinity Gene and what was that? It came out on XBLA and PS. I can't remember what it's called, but that was a really, you know, really, really good variant on their Space Invaders, you know, relatively recently.
I mean, stuff like Gradius and stuff like that, that was kind of a bit like a kind of sideways one, but it's kind of a kind of scrolling through like a level type thing. So it's kind of a variant on it.
Yeah, back in the days when horizontal shooter and vertical shooter were genres.
Yeah.
Because they make some difference.
Okay.
What would you say your favourite game is?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing.
Whizball.
The most.
Whizball or Tetris. But they're completely different. You've not played Whizball. Whizball.
Okay.
No.
As in whiz and ball. Because you play a ball with a wizard inside.
Ah, yes. I remember that one.
And the only version of the game that matters is the Commodore 64 version, because it was the original, and all the others they managed to screw up in one way or another because it got converted by different people.
Oops.
But that example of a classic game where it's just I honestly do not know why there hasn't been any new versions, because you just go around these different levels and they've been robbed of their colour. There's three colours that you have to pick up and mix for each level. You can access three or four levels at once by going up or down in, you know, little holes in the landscape. And you pick up droplets of paint of different colours, and little cauldrons at the bottom of the screen will fill up with the different colours, so it's in a red, green and blue. And then when you collect enough of the relevant ones to mix up the required colour, one of the required colours on each stage, you'll go into a bonus stage, and then you can select a power-up that you want as a permanent feature on your, well, I would say ship. It is a shoot-em-up, but it's weird. It's not like Gradius or anything like that. It's, you'd have to play it. But yeah, that's a brilliant example. Things like Paradroid or Magnetron, why we haven't seen modern day versions of that, I honestly do not know. Because they're shoot 'em ups where you run around mazes of these ships. You have to destroy the other droids, but you can take over different droids, and each one has different abilities, like different weaponry, different vulnerabilities. Some of them you can take over for longer. Some of them they're very powerful, but you can only occupy for a certain amount of time. Now, things like that, and in the Spectrum version of the game, which is by the same studio, but it was a different programmer, so that's why it's got a different name, Quasitron. You could pick up different abilities from each of the droids. Like you could take over one droid and it would have a powerful laser. So you could steal the laser from that and discard the rest. Or this one's got a hover drive, so you could steal the hover drive so you could float over gaps. All that kind of thing. Why haven't we seen new versions? Yeah, come on, that sounds good, doesn't it, as a game?
Yes.
Can I just ask, where would you kind of see edge of retro games? I mean, is it the NES era, the SNES era? Is it, basically pre-3D, or what would be classed as retro to you?
I would say 2D would be a particular era, especially towards the end of the Super Nintendo and the Mega Drive, where I think, 2D was just, they knew, the machines were capable of displaying some really nice graphics and doing some really nice effects with it. And the pixel artists were, really coming into their own. And then you've got 3D where, Jesus Christ, early 3D is horrible. to me, the PlayStation and the Saturn are just, a lot of the time, eyeball-meltingly bad to look at, because you've got horrible low detail models and everything popping out all over the place because they don't have floating point. But personally, I'm erring towards, if someone called PlayStation 2 retro gaming, because this generation has been going on since 2005.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This current generation of consoles. I'd be willing to accept that, but I'd still frown at them.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'd try more if they just said, "Oh yes, God of War 2 was the first game I ever played when I was really little," and it would be.
When I was 7, I was playing Dizzy.
Dizzy.
Oh, don't forget my issue of I wasn't allowed to play games until Pokemon Red and Blue came out, and then I was finally allowed to play the game.
Sheltered.
Yeah. I watched other people play video games, but I wasn't actually physically allowed on said games until I was about 12, 13. Which is quite bad, I know.
That's criminal.
Living room full of them.
That's true. Yeah. Should I talk about my...
Whereas I was being shut away by, I think, age 11, easily.
Oh, okay.
Right. And I've never changed.
Okay, I suppose I should probably talk about the thing that I always come back to and that I will probably defend, probably poorly, but will always defend, and that's Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel television series, Buffy Sweden, and all that lot. Basically, I really like them. I really, really like them. I started watching Buffy when the BBC originally were sort of started airing it within about a year of its release back in the 90s. Used to watch it when it was on sort of like BBC Two at either, was it 6 or 7 o'clock?
Yeah.
On like a Thursday night or something. So yeah, I used to watch that. Didn't you tend to watch the uncensored versions or unedited versions that they kind of put out later on in the week?
Okay.
They put late night versions on, which won't
about 11 o'clock, wasn't it?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't watch that because one, it used to be passed by.
Yeah, it was marred.
And two, I wasn't usually allowed to watch television that late if I was that up that late anyway. So, but I did collect. I'd never collected the TV series on video for like Buffy, but I did start collecting Angel on video. Originally, and that was because of how much was it Channel 4 kind of messed around with airing it and everything. And so it
became, Channel 4 when they first
started
off, it was comically bad, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I kind of gave up watching Angel on telly and basically collected the video box sets because this was before DVD was really that big. I do have all of it now on DVD.
Cool.
But I mean, because when people think about Buffy and Angel, they like tend to think about, like, especially Buffy, like the really the not so normal episodes, as in Once More With Feeling, the musical
or Hush,
which is the one where everyone's quiet, or something really depressing and but yet amazing at the same time, like The Body, which is the one where Joyce passes away.
Yep.
Yeah, that was like
It's eerie quiet, but it's also like it's one of the saddest and heart wrenching bits of telly you could probably ever watch. You know, it's thoroughly kind of like they really hit the beats and everything, but I don't really want to talk about that one. That or an Angel, I don't think I can ever think of anything that really stands, like anyone, I never hear anyone talk about specific episodes of Angel that really stand out to them.
I've got one.
Which one's yours?
The one where Spike and Angel get turned into puppets. I thought that was brilliant.
To be fair,
it was just Angel. Got turned to puppet.
But the other one that I was actually thinking of is the one where Lorne kind of does this projection. So he basically...
Yeah, see, those are both season 5 episodes, the last season.
Yeah, you know exactly what I was talking about there.
Yeah. but for me, there's one episode of Buffy that I was kind of like... It's not like my favourite, but I'll tend to reflect on it the most. And there's an episode of Angel, which is not necessarily my favourite, but I tend to end up dwelling on it more.
What about the one where Angel leaves Darla and Drusilla in the basement of the Wolfman Hart guys to basically kill them? And is like, yeah, I just can't seem to care.
Is that like, is that late season? Is that late season two? Early season? It's late season two, isn't it?
Yes, it is season two.
Okay, Buffy episode that I tend to go back to a lot is Band Candy from season 3. So everyone's still in high school. The town hasn't been destroyed, but it's the season where like the mayor's the bad guy, and it's early on in the series. It's like about episode 7 or something. And basically the mayor's kind of like, I've got to do a sacrifice, or blah blah. How are we gonna do this? And he talks to Mr. Trick, his vampire cohort, about what they're gonna do, and you know, it's just kind of like, oh, you know, yeah, let's do a thing. I don't know. We need to sacrifice. We've got a thing that we need to sacrifice. So you don't realize what they're going to sacrifice until near the end of the episode when Buffy's in full kind of like mode to kind of deal with everything. And is everything still working? I'm a bit concerned. Yeah. Okay, everything's still working apparently.
It's just Google Hangouts being a bit weird.
Okay, it's just been a bit weird. Mm-hmm. Just be when I'm talking about my things. Anyway, so Ben Candy. So a sacrifice needs to be done. you know, and so sort this out. Meanwhile, at the school, oh, they need to raise money for the band, for the school band, you know, brass band and all that kind of thing. Oh, let's sell candy bars. You know, Principal Snyder's like, let go on, sell these candy bars, everyone. Everyone, even if you're not in the band, everyone's got to go sell the candy bars. Of course, it becomes quite clear within about a day or so of these things hitting the street. Hitting the street. It's like they're bloody bad news. Yeah. As the adults of Sunnydale slowly turn into anything but adults. Physically, they still look like adults. Mentally, anything but adults who know what responsibility...
That's the one with Ripper.
Yes. Ripper turns up. So it's just funny. You got the whole town of Sunnydale, basically, all the adults have basically turned into sort of 16 to 18-year-olds. So basically, you know, like Buffy and the Scoobies age range. Everyone's absolutely horrified. There's basically people doing things in the Bronze of a certain age that you'd never expect to do those kind of things in the Bronze at a certain age. It's just absolute utter chaos. And there's Buffy and the others getting grossed out by everything, left, right, and centre, basically, and just being thoroughly unimpressed and acting seemingly far more mature than their parents and sort of like significant others. And it's just, so funny.
Am I right in thinking that Buffy was the series that actually launched Joss Whedon?
Probably. I mean, it's probably the series
that allowed him to
do slightly crazier things like Firefly, obviously, and Dollhouse, because they're so different compared to Buffy and Angel.
Yeah.
But there was another thing I liked about that. Who was that? He just tried to kill us with sound.
What?
Hello?
Hello? Hi,
I was just moving a cable there.
I think we've got like one viewer, so you may have just like killed their eardrums or something at the moment. That's brilliant.
I apologize.
Anyway, the thing about band candy is the insinuation at the end, because Joyce and Giles, aka Ripper at this point, it appears they've spent the evening together. And then at the end of the episode, once everything's back to normal and Buffy's getting like a lift home or something from school, and she's kind of like, oh, you guys didn't, yeah, I'm just glad I got to you guys before you could do anything. And there's just this moment where Joyce and Giles just look at each other and it's just like, ho-ho. Because Buffy got handed some, you know, like police handcuffs at one point. We do know that it probably either happened on top of a police car or inside a police car. That's where it kind of starts off. It's you know, the whole kind of like James Bond, here's how it starts, and we pan away and fade to the next scene. You know, this is kind of that moment in the episode. Otherwise, it's a pretty much unremarkable episode, because it's like, it's just crazy stuff happens. The bad guys for the season's obviously up to something, but they don't quite. Well, I mean, they realise it's him at the end, you know. But yeah.
Okay, can I just ask? Basically, because obviously you've got the beginning of the series where it's kind of Monster of the Week.
Yeah.
And then you start getting overarching storylines and whatnot. Which do you prefer? In terms of kind of mode.
I preferred the overarching storylines when they started bringing that in more. I mean, because it started in the 90s, and it's one of those series that was kind of transitional between moving from this kind of like Monster of the Week, Problem of the Week, whatever, that a lot of American series were tending to do, and kind of moving into more, there could be something of the week going on, but actually it still feeds into this overarching plot that's going on for the entire season. So like, obviously X-Files, another Fox, Buffy was aired on Fox at one point, was produced at Fox, obviously.
Until the end of season 5
or something like that, switch. But at the same time, both of them were like still sort of like Monster of the Week, I think. Even X-Files, because Buffy started at what, like 96 97,
yeah,
I think, even at that point. So X-Files is in either season 4 or 3 or 4 at that point, and it was still a lot of sort of Monster of the Week, but they were getting more kind of a lot more overarching plot, and then Buffy started doing that far more partway through sort of like season 2. and certainly by season four it's well established that it's kind of an overarching plot, and everything kind of like became a bit more mature, which obviously reflected the fact that Buffy was in college, as was Willow and Oz and stuff, so it kind of made sense that it kind of progressed like that.
Yeah.
And obviously the thing with like season four of Buffy is that that's when Angel starts as well, so you've got season four of Buffy and season one of Angel running in tandem. And obviously with crossovers that happen would happen, and that's one thing I like, was the fact that they did have crossovers, you know, like with the sort of like some of the Star Treks, is that you did have moments where the characters really come into each other's shows,
like Spike cropping up, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, Spike pretty much moved wholesale over to Angel for the final season.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Because obviously there was that point where like Buffy season 7 ended, but Angel series 5 continued.
In fact,
continued.
This reminds me, we might be able to plug, because this kind of leads into it, of basically what happens after these series have been like done and had their day on TV and they go into comics. I'm thinking about the Cornwall graphic novel.
Oh yeah, so if you're somehow based in Cornwall, like we are, I'm doing this a lot tonight. Oh yeah, these hands. End of August, final weekend of August, that Saturday in Falmouth, there will be a meeting of the Cornwall graphic novel group. We are going to be discussing comics and graphic novels that continue on from where TV series left off, and will tie in with the actual TV series whilst it's still on air a bit. So it's like it's a bit canon, if not completely canon.
Cool.
So yeah, that's the thing. So yeah, search Cornwall Graphic Novel Group. Find information about it. Anyway, go back to Buffy and Angel.
Yeah, sorry.
Angel episode that always stands out to me, and I kind of hinted at this, season 2. First episode, which is called Judgment. This is the first time we're introduced to the character of Lorne, who runs Karatos, the club where you cut, but demons and humans can go to, you can't commit any violence or anything. But the particular thing, and it's actually a really nice way to open up the episode, and completely unexpected. If you hadn't been reading anything up to that point, when that episode originally went on, was that you've got Lorne singing in his club, and he's kind of like, he's singing "I Will Survive." And he just kind of, and then he starts talking about basically summarizing the weird atmosphere that LA's got going on. And it's this just this really nice kind of narrative moment mixing just sort of like song and just straightforward narrative. And it's just, it's quite effective. And then the rest of the episode's actually really good because it's dealing with the after effects of the passing of Doyle in the previous season more. And just kind of like Wesley, Angel, Cordelia trying to be super organized while still not having a proper office, at dealing with the evil crap that is going on in LA.
I've got to admit, with the evolution of Wesley's character,
he's still pretty innocent at this
point. Oh, yeah. But I think Angel, as a series, was already kind of going a very, very dark route.
Mm.
So I think Lorne is kind of the, breath of fresh air, as it were.
Yeah, he was. Especially
when they actually go to Pylea.
That's true.
And they find Fred. And
Yeah.
And there's this one bit where, like, in the background, one of the guys is dancing. Pylean's is dancing, and that's actually Joss Whedon doing that.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh. I just.
I'm gonna have to hunt that down now.
Okay, you have to go rewatch the episode now and just check. Is that Joss Whedon dancing? Is Joss Whedon? The opening of season 2 just always stood out. And of course, you've got the whole thing going on with like Darla's been resurrected, and she's like, actually, where do you meet her resurrected and not in a cage, in the offices of Wolfram and Hart? And she's just kind of in this darkened kind of lawyer's office, and Lindsay's in there, and what's her face? The other female lawyer.
Oh, Lila.
Lila's in there as well. And they're just kind of like, Lila's trying to talk, kind of baby talk to Darla, and like Lindsay's like, no, don't, blah, blah, sticking on some Chopin or something. It's like, obviously, depressing piano music starts. And it's just kind of like, she doesn't like the something or other. And just kind of like you see Darla, and like she's all human but acting all super creepy still. And that's just kind of like, but she's a completely different character to obviously A, being summoned in a box, and B, the character that we previously knew her as in Buffy before she got staked in the heart by Angel.
I think one of the interesting things about Angel is that in comparison to Buffy, because Buffy was always, you know, even like a monster per series, like, you know, you had the Master, you had, you know, the Mayor, you had Adam, you had Glory, you know, and there's always something that she has to beat, and she does beat it every single season, whereas Angel...
There's always that niggling at the heels of Wolfram and Hart.
Exactly.
Whilst there's a bigger evil going on.
And even at the end, you know, when he takes control of Wolfram and Hart, and it's like, even then, he cannot really destroy it.
He really can't.
So it's almost like a very much more grown up version of, you know, kind of what Buffy was trying to do.
If you look at the BBFC age ratings for box sets and stuff, Buffy's like 15, Angel's 18. Angel's 18 for I think just the first season. It was like one episode or something. They're just like, 18.
Isn't that one episode? I think it's the one where Faith tortures Wesley a bit.
Could be. That particular episode, that opening of Angel of season 2. It goes at the end, there's like Angel visiting Faith in prison, talking to her about what's been going on, trying to be normal and stuff. And I think everyone obviously thinks about Buffy a lot with Buffy and like Willow and stuff, but then like the character of Faith as she kind of developed from Buffy and obviously in Angel.
Yeah.
Obviously from what happens in Buffy and like the events of season 3, season 4, and then just kind of like her basically having to go for recuperation. And that was always an interesting kind of ongoing subplot between the two series.
I mean, then you have Willow, who, you know, kind of grew in amazing and unexpected ways. Starts out as this, you know, tiny little kind of school geek, and then kind of gets a bit into witchcraft, and, you know, goes through college a bit more into witchcraft. She's not very good at it at this point, and she
finds out she likes ladies.
And then she keeps on going, and, you know, at the end, you know, she kind of brings back Buffy from the dead, and she's the big bad in season 6 at the end, and it's then, like, Willow is a badass.
And then season 7, though, magic addiction issues, isn't
it?
Season six, but then season seven is kind of the aftermath.
Yeah, that's when she kind of goes into recovery, but then also she, in essence, becomes not necessarily more powerful than Buffy, but she helps out Buffy.
She's powerful in her own way.
I mean, she's the one that actually activated all the Slayers.
Yes.
So she's core to the, you know, Buffy lore.
Very cool.
Core to the Buffy lore.
Very cool. I think this is gonna have to be where we talk about all the cool stuff this week. However, our guest, who would have been with us tonight if it weren't for annoying technical issues, would like us to tell you some stuff. So, basically, a guy called Rich Stamp. He's from Firm of Cornwall. Rick Stamp. He's launching a new gaming bar in Falmouth called 8-Bit Gaming Bar. They've had an Indiegogo going recently, and they're planning to launch another one by the sounds of things. You can find them on Facebook at facebook.com/8bitFalmouth. They're also on Twitter as 8bit_Falmouth. So if you want to follow that, if you're local.
Dash bit?
It's 8bit_.
So 8-bit all one word.
Yeah.
I would like to complain that this is down south and not up here in Carlisle.
I was going to say, it'd be nice to have something like that come up here.
You've had loading move from Falmouth to Soho, so that's a bit closer to you.
Yeah.
I know with the issue of Carlisle, like, moving between Cornwall and London is obviously not that much of a gain.
You see, really, what we need is support to actually franchise these places out.
That's true.
Yes.
No, so you know, you can have like a loading or an 8-bit.
It's kind of funny because when Rick was kind of starting up sort of the 8-bit sort of thing and kind of publicly announcing it, and it's happening regardless of what happens with Indiegogo stuff. It was just kind of like, oh, you know, why are you stealing the companion key? It was kind of like, how to put this? He was kind of like, yeah, so it's definitely happening, and it's 8-bit and all that. I'm trying to think what I wanted to say. You distracted me. You're a bad person. Slap yourself.
The companion cube.
Slap yourself.
There's no need to be distracted. The companion cube will never threaten to stab you.
Might do in a minute.
Yes, it probably will. Anyway, 8-bit game buzz only, and they're going to be fundraising a bit more and stuff. And if you're in Cornwall or Devon, because you guys still haven't quite got anything like it at the moment, maybe you want to donate funds, but it's going to be kind of like, you know, stuff you can play, arcade machine or two, lots of booze, games.
Why is it down south?
Well, Falmouth is a student town a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Students do like stuff, but actually you see that there are a lot of geeks in Cornwall. We do that, kind of,
I mean, let's not say that there's not geeks everywhere else around. It's just that, well, first we had loading.
Yeah, and then they moved to Soho.
Yeah, and then they moved to Soho, and this is kind of filling the gap.
Yeah, we got used to having a gamer bar, and since loading moved away, we've been desperate for a new one.
You've been bereft.
Yeah, we really have. So it's desperately needed. Anyway, we'll be having links for stuff like the Indiegogo campaign and 8-bit. Basically, we'll give you links for 8-bit Famith in the write up for this, and on the NerdAssemble website and everything. So, you know, and maybe we will actually get Rick on the show sometime, if technology permitting, in some manner or way. It might be easier for us to just drag him from Falmouth to this house. I mean, we've done it with a writer for Green Wing before.
That's very true.
I'm sure we can do it with a... I can't remember what level he is in Taekwondo, but he's got quite a high belt level.
Okay.
And he's also a butcher.
There you go, Paul. That's your next mission.
So.
And he's also a butcher.
Yeah. Well, he's been working as a butcher for a long time, but he wants to get into the barn business. So... He's a trustworthy gent. Do you know what? If he'd managed to make it onto this episode, he would have been talking to us about D&D. D&D. Anyway, this has been the...
Before?
Oh, showing off the T-shirts, yep. Are we?
Retroid, show us yours.
He's not going to show us his T-shirt.
Well, my T-shirt, just to check.
Yeah, just to check. Oh, no!
Okay, I'm panning down.
And Cookie, what about yours?
There we go. There we go. Danger is my middle name.
I'm just wearing a check shirt like a lumberjack, mate.
But you're a...
Okay, well...
I'm a lumberjack, yes I am.
This has been a very unusual episode 50 of the NerdAssemble podcast. Thank you for sticking through with us for like the past year.
Can we just reiterate... stuff that we've kind of plugged today.
Okay, you do the plugging.
Okay, well, basically, we've launched a website, Hex Dimension, which covers all sorts of geekdom.
HexDimension.com is where you can find it.
Yeah, and obviously there's the 8-bit gaming bar.
In Falmouth. It's soon to come.
Yeah, and you've been listening to Nerds Assemble.
So it's good night from...
It's good night from me. I'm Paul Wood, Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Paul, aka OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. And you can also find me lurking around thegamejar.com and some new content on thehexdimension.com.
Okay, it's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, paul-blewett.com, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EK6891. You can maybe find some random stuff on drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. Obviously, I got loads of stuff going up on hexdimension.com now. You can find NerdAssemble Podcast also on its website, nerdassemble.co.uk, which will continue to run regardless of Hex, just in case you're worried that we're moving or anything. You don't need to adjust your iTunes, your RSS, whatever you're using to subscribe to us. That is continuing to be mainly hosted there. We'll just, you know, be cross-posting it to Hex Dimension. You can find Nerds Assemble also on Facebook at Nerds Assemble Podcast, on Google Plus on Nerds Assemble Podcast, you can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, as well as Hex Dimension on hexdimension.com. It's on Twitter at Hex Dimension, all one word. We're also on Facebook as Hex Dimension.
Smooth.
I believe that's
excuse bless.
Me. A, I unhook myself from this gentleman, and B, move to our end broadcast button, as this is a Google Plus Hangout. But it's been wonderful.
Night.
People. So, good night.
Good night.
Night.
Good night.